When you're just starting out to lead active student-centered learning in your classroom, you could very quickly, very easily get overwhelmed with the amount of things, ideas, information you have to keep track of. So I'm going to give you some tips for organizing all that important stuff. You're looking to change things up in your classroom. You'd like to see more student participation and interest, or you really need a better way to tap into each student's individual abilities. Maybe you're happy with everything in your classroom and you're just that teacher who will stop at nothing to provide the very best opportunities for your students, so you're always open to hear more good news. Well, let me personally welcome you to the Student-Centered Science Teacher Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Carosis. I'm a secondary science teacher with 11 years experience teaching at-risk students in a distance learning cyber model. And yet, I've realized success in my efforts to plan for and execute student-centered learning. See, I believe that a science teacher's job goes beyond transferring specific content knowledge. Rather, I believe our duty is to prepare students for life beyond our walls, to help develop them into informed, active members of society who can confidently make all kinds of decisions. So on this podcast, our discussions will focus on strategies to promote active learning in the classroom and their outcomes, as well as creating and nurturing a culture that enables students to take ownership of their learning by planning next steps and implementing our feedback. Here, we believe that our classrooms are learning laboratories, not just for students, but also for teachers. You'll always get encouragement to keep on experimenting, because what you do and how you do it matters. Let's jump into today's topic. All right, we're going to talk about organizing our active learning efforts today. How is organizing so hard or bad? It is because everything about our approach in student-centered learning, student-centered instruction and teaching is action-oriented. Everything. So if you are a lecturer, if you've fallen into that regular habitual kind of practice out of necessity, right? No judgment zone here. You probably are used to just managing your notes, a pile of worksheets, or maybe, you know, back in the day you dealt with maybe the overheads, right? But now you have a series of PowerPoint files, and the PowerPoint files are in the folders on your computer. And what more organization do I need? Truly, when you are teacher-centered, you are trying to transfer knowledge. All you have to manage is your knowledge. All you have to manage is your curriculum. All you have to manage is your content. Maybe you have, you know, a list of videos you can share, or a list of pictures, or maybe you have some analogies written in the margins of your notes that you want to explain or describe or prompt discussion. But that is not the essence of what we're doing in student-centered learning. When you're providing experiences every day, whether they are technology-based or hands-on manipulative-based, your students are doing. And so now you must manage multiple aspects of your instruction. And it tends to be all about them and their action. But before I jump right into there, I want to make sure that you have taken some time. And this is a longer video, but it's super important. Take some time to watch my Reflecting as Routine video, because when you organize yourself, you're going to find a wealth of data. And that data that you collect that is, as a scientist, maybe just an observation for you, might be just anecdotal. When you collect it and document it, you can look back on it and learn mounds and mounds about your curriculum, about your students, about your approach, and maybe how you can change. Maybe how you can get better. Maybe how learning would happen more effectively. So definitely a shout out to that video there. I am going to make references to some pieces of that video. So if you haven't watched it yet, you'll get the essence of it here. And that is that there is a cycle I think, to effective teacher reflection, especially in the student-centered space. And that is this idea that if we have a clear, determined purpose, and we're using that to prepare our lessons, and we're using our lessons, our plan to deliver our lesson, then we're reviewing what comes out of that lesson. There is reflection at every stage in that process. And by reflection, I am just referring to thoughtful consideration. Thoughtful consideration, how we're planning our lesson as it pertains to the purpose we're trying to achieve. The big purpose, not the lesson du jour, right? And so on. So I'm going to refer to this today. What we're going to see is that we can actually split this cycle in half when it comes to organizing our efforts and collecting the relevant data to reflect upon. And so going back to this main idea today, that student-centered classrooms are action-oriented. Students are doing and you are doing. Your role is so wildly different than it was when you were lecturing at the front of the room. Therefore, the data we collect needs to be action-oriented. If you're watching me today, and the primary data that you collect each day, or each week, or each unit, or each lesson is an exit ticket. It's not bad, it's great, some end-of-lesson formative data, your summative test data, standardized data, maybe all the teachers on your team give the same test, and you're looking at that, comparing that. There's so much more there if you're action-oriented, if your students are encountering and completing learning experiences each and every day. And like I said, if you are already, you might think of that as formative assessment that you're just observing, and maybe you're making some notes on. Well, this is about organizing those notes and recognizing where your opportunities exist to collect them. So the data we collect, being action-oriented, in my view, falls in two categories. It does fall in curriculum, and it falls in the student realm. And so, and I am speaking from my daily experience, daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly. We have to keep track of what we're trying to achieve, what our plans are, and what was the outcome of those plans. So some things we think of with regard to curriculum data and organizing that is the activities and exercises that we're creating or that we have created and delivered. At any point in that cycle of reflection, in any point in that cycle of instruction, we are wanting to keep track of the activities and the exercises. And primarily, your administrators and you should be concerned with them being aligned to standards. So sometimes just there is a big task in organizing, depending on which standards you're following, how deconvoluted they are and difficult to understand or sort through, and whether or not your school, all your organization already has a system for cataloging those. At my school, we recently, in the past few years, have adopted a technology-based system for clarifying our entire, mapped our curriculum for the entire course, and we house our lessons in there. But truly, speaking as a teacher using that database, it's more of a database for the school as a whole, for the district, and to report to the state in performance and for them to keep track, because it really doesn't help me at all in my personal day-to-day execution. So I have a separate system for doing that. I'm going to share with you in a little bit. You might also be concerned with, you should be concerned with, which outcomes each activity is going to produce. What outcomes? I mean, what are the core ideas that each activity is connected with? And what are the scientific practices that each activity should produce? What should students be able to know and do when they're done? And again, cataloging them in any way that you see fit, perhaps as a timeline on a calendar or according to standards. But definitely, as we are planning, we need to keep in mind activities and standards, core ideas. And as we're reflecting, we absolutely need to know about those outcomes. And then there's just the logistics of where does this all fit in our pacing, in our sequence of delivering the course. What lesson does it belong in? What unit does it belong in? Perhaps it's a concept you're spiraling on. I teach chemistry, and chemistry is very, very cumulative. What you learn in the beginning can be usually carried through to the end. So in how many places are you going to reinforce this? And those notes are really super helpful to be able to keep organized. That's all front-end work. All this curriculum stuff. I mentioned some reflection with the outcomes, but really when we're considering curriculum data, we are considering our lesson plan, what we have created for our students to do, to be action-oriented, and then how we're using that plan to deliver. When are we delivering it? In what order are we delivering it? And is it all aligned to our personal teaching purpose, our philosophy, our focused, desired outcome, and is it aligned to the interests of your school, your district, your state, federal, and so on. So all this curriculum data that we want to organize ultimately helps us in being organized so we can learn from it. No different than you creating note guides for your students. Now, I would suggest that a basic lesson plan, format, template allows you to get there. It really checks all these boxes. And if you're watching this video, haven't had an opportunity to download the lesson planning framework that I use, I have provided it in, whether you're in the free community, the Student Centered Science Teacher Society, wherever you're watching this, there is a link available for you there, or directly as a link below the video. You'll see here it's my framework, it's a 5-part framework, and it's got all sorts of little notes in there. Every single portion of it is supposed to incorporate or reminds me to incorporate some disciplinary literacy in science. But really it helps me know exactly what activity I am running each day, how I plan to deliver that activity, whether it is individual, small group, or whole group, how I have activated and integrated prior knowledge surrounding that activity, what scientific practice I want students to gain from having learned that activity. So going through the data analysis portion and then incorporating this into a larger catalog, a larger planner type tool to help me keep track of lesson and unit and position within the school year. But of course, there at the top, I also have like period, week, and date because so many of us juggle multiple preps, right? And all of that is super awesome and important as well. And you might already have a lesson plan template like this that maybe you don't even bother using because, I've got this computerized database system that my school provides. But really, if you keep track of it, and sometimes this is just a once and done thing, to go throughout your school year, one a day, or perhaps like right now this week, I'm running a lesson that takes us 3 days. So sometimes it's not one a day. And to keep your notes here and to keep them in, that specific place in the sequence so that next year when you get there, you can go back and look through your notes. And all of this curriculum data will help you reflect on how to provide a better lesson, a more effective lesson, that maybe circumvents some of the misunderstandings you found pop up the year before, or maybe just needs to move faster or slower than the year before. It's really critical to our reflective practices. But then, in my view, the bigger and more important piece of this is your student data to keep track of. This is the harder one to manage because we're taught how to manage curriculum. We're right from teacher school, we know that we need a lesson plan kind of format, and we've probably been introduced to many of them. Perhaps you've never considered how helpful they could be to your reflection. But when you start delivering student-centered learning experiences, now we amp up our need to manage our record keeping. And so some student data I would suggest that you're collecting is, number one, attendance. Also probably required by your school, also probably logged in a database somewhere, but that absenteeism, that attendance record can reveal things to you personally if you're putting it in a place in a system of record keeping that will prompt you to consider it. And is absenteeism a problem? Is there a pattern with the absenteeism? And if we're disregarding absenteeism and the problems associated with that, we might just be able to keep track of this in a way so that we know which students were not present for specific instruction. Perhaps the lesson they missed was really, really critical to the remainder of understanding in the week. So, of course, attendance is important to track. But then when we're issuing activities, we're wondering, did the students complete the activity? Did they do all the things that you anticipated they would do in the time provided? Now, completing, of course, is not showing mastery. So we want to consider which students and did each student master the activity? Of course, the opposite of master is struggle. Which students struggled with the activity? And in your curriculum notes, you might even be noting, what does completion look like? What does mastery look like? And what does struggle look like? In my experience, oftentimes struggle is not participating or a participation that doesn't show completion. As a teacher, especially once you get doing the student-centered thing, you become akin very, very quickly to a student's patterns of behavior and their ability. Are they practicing avoidance because they feel intimidated by the activity? Or are they authentically trying? Is there effort involved there? Or are they truly, is there a block to learning somehow? So completed master and struggle are entirely different. Of course, a student could be present and not complete the activity. They could not even start it, you know. And your benchmark for completion might be different from mine. So this is where curriculum data and student data, they really do start to mesh, and to have those notes available and together can be really, really super effective on the tail end of this reflection cycle, where now you've delivered the lesson, you're reviewing the student work, perhaps in real time in class. But also, if you are collecting artifacts, which I highly recommend you do as part of a student-centered instructional program, to have them produce something for you every day so that you learn more about them. Remember, this is all about creating meaningful relationships and reigniting our fire for being servants to the next generation, right? And we want to review those artifacts and have a catalog of those so we know what to expect and we know how to support and grow our students. And ultimately, going back to our big purpose, is it reinforcing our purpose or is it showing us that we need to tweak our purpose just a little bit, our overarching teaching philosophy? So, I mean, these things, ideally, you wouldn't have them all separated, and you definitely aren't just going to keep track of them in your brain because there is just so much there. The student data portion, I've come up with what I think is a really fantastic, of course I'm partial, really fantastic method for keeping track of it. And it is just a spreadsheet-like organization where we would have student names along the left-hand side as shown here. And then every day of the week, we can note our lesson title. Underneath each lesson title, each day of the week, there are those four categories, little radio buttons that we can fill in for present, complete, mastery, and struggle. And then you can see also there is a category for IEPs, individual education plans. And of course, that's something we want to consider as we're reviewing student data. So if you can imagine having this entire spreadsheet filled out, completed for 20 to 30 students in your classroom, and how you can easily start to observe patterns. We're talking about data. It's not computerized, but your eyes, they see patterns. And that's what you're trying to teach your students, but they're not going to see this data. You can reflect on each individual student over 1 week time. Were they absent the entire week? Did they merely complete the activity each day of the week? Did they master half of them and struggle half of them? you do begin to see patterns emerge. And it's not then about this is a good student and this is a bad student. It now becomes which students can I push forward and which students do I need to provide more intensive support for and to. Which students maybe do I have to tweak my process and my product and my learning activities to help them be successful? Similarly, we can consider our curriculum with this data, because if we look at a single day and try to extract certain patterns from that day, like, half of the class struggled, half of the class completed, sprinkling in of a few students with mastery, that may be a lesson we need to rework completely. Maybe we need to shift and change, differentiate the activity itself. Maybe we need to use small groups instead of individual students. You know, we need to look at that data, and data doesn't lie. I'm not really a proponent of number data. I'm never going to teach on summative assessment data, because as a scientist at heart, I don't really love this idea that data can tell us anything. And it's so many variables to sorting out number test data, right? But this becomes super crystal clear as it pertains to a purpose of serving our students so that they can come out with true life skills from their science class, not just a collection of facts, but all that series of doing, observing, asking questions, analyzing data, proposing solutions, making inferences. Clearly, when you see a column full of mastery here, you can celebrate. Pop it open at the end of the day. You had a good day. You achieved your goals. So I would say that this one resource really, really does both things for us. It gives us qualitative data on our curriculum and our student work, and helps us reflect in a big, big, big way. Now, when we combine them, the lesson plan and the individual actual execution data, we can have a real powerful piece going into the next school year and go in with our own armory of prior knowledge. So I have combined these resources, two separate resources you certainly could print, and they are free. You can download them below. But I've combined them into a digital planner because I have found, oh my word, since I have discovered this nifty Apple Pencil and the GoodNotes app on my iPad, I is mind blown, okay? That seems so silly, but I started out with digital planning. I had listened to a podcast, and a person was being interviewed who creates digital planners, and I was like, digital planners. So I went to see what she produces, and it's such a simple thing. I have since seen similar outlines at Target. Okay. Focus three. I don't know if anybody's ever told you, focus on three things in the day. And then there's other things. But if you can accomplish those focus three, you got it going on. So like, she really helped me, and her tools really helped me master my mind at a time when I was trying to shift my instructional strategies. And I love it. So I made my own digital planner with teacher tools in mind, with all of the resources that she couldn't provide because she wasn't a teacher. And what you can see here included is an annual calendar, a monthly calendars, and then we have that weekly student activity tracker and a daily lesson planner. So we're covered on every level with really specific prompts to allow us the best possible reflection. And as a digital planner, every single button, every single calendar day number icon is linked to take you immediately to that day. The whole navigation series here that you can learn more about in the information below. Or you can print each page. You can print each page and just three hole punch it, assemble it into a binder, into your own your own hard copy system. That way you can maybe take out your activity tracker, put it on a clipboard as you circulate the room each day. Or make a photocopy of your lesson plan for your principal who might be visiting and they know what to expect you're going to be working on. Or it becomes the foundation for a reflection you're doing for your own teacher evaluation. That's something we have to do. I don't know if everybody's got to do it. But it's so it's digital or it's you print. It's really up to you. This product, though I sell it separately, is a bonus product in the Active Learning Laboratory, because in the Active Learning Laboratory, I do the best I can to educate teachers about what active learning student-centered philosophy is and give them the tools to get it done when they are just starting out. So that might be something you want to consider. I certainly touched today on those meaningful relationships, as that is part of my core purpose in delivering these messages to you. But I want to let you know that the next series of four videos totally solely focused on cultivating and nurturing those meaningful relationships, because as teachers, we have so many relationships we need to cultivate and nurture and maintain. And so we'll spotlight each of those in the month to come. I hope that you will follow along. Certainly subscribe, like, share, do your thing. If you haven't watched that reflection video, get there, do that first. And I'd love for you to join my community. It's totally free, community.labineverylesson.com. If you want to see more of what's included in the Active Learning Laboratory, you can download the 3-step action plan. And I look forward to seeing you there. Thanks for joining me.